City Councilman. For Free Speech Radio News in New York, I'm Simba Rousseau.
Free Speech Radio News is produced at WBAI by Kata Mesta. Headlines editors from WMNF in Tampa, Florida are Randy Zimmerman and Nell Abrams. Our DC editor is Josh Chaffin. Technical producers at KPFA in Berkeley are Jade Paget-Seekins and Pauline Bartolone. We have web support from Vanessa Tate and Leslie Holmes. Our interns are Carlos Favara and Rosalind Fay. I'm Deepa Fernandez.
It's 7 o'clock in New York on WBAI FM. It's time for Off the Hook. Good evening, and welcome to Off the Hook. We're wondering, where in this country is Emmanuel Goldstein?
Well, Emmanuel Goldstein is on the telephone right now, and geographically, I'm perched atop a canyon in the lovely town of Bisbee, Arizona. Actually, I'm not perched on the canyon. I'm parked in a car overlooking a scenic view, and I'm doing that because that way I can have a laptop on, I can be on a cellular phone that's running out of battery, and it's plugged into an inverter, which is in the car, so I actually have AC power that I'm able to use here. And I have the Never Lost GPS system, which I'd like to demonstrate live on the air, which has been a ton of fun throughout this entire voyage. Bisbee, Arizona, is an amazing place. It's kind of like an artist enclave where people just come and do all kinds of interesting things. You wouldn't expect in the middle of the desert to find a thriving community like this. I'd like to say if there's any listeners in Bisbee, which is entirely possible, please feel free to meet up with us. We're on the Kevin Mitnick Liberation Tour, which has taken us through quite a few places in the country, and we'll wind up in California next week as Kevin Mitnick celebrates his true taste of freedom. As of January 20th, he will no longer have to have permission to travel outside of his area. He will no longer be using the Internet. And it's going to be a great time to actually see this this saga come to an end. I'm sure everybody will share in that. But no matter how you feel about the case, it's good to want to think. That's where I am right now. And I have lots of experiences and things to share as far as what's been going on, as I'm sure people back there in New York do as well.
And do you still have daylight out there?
Daylight is still here, yeah. In fact, the sun has just disappeared over this little mountain ridge. It's funny because a whole busload of tourists just pulled up, and they're all taking pictures over the fence of the giant canyon that exists here. Actually, I think this is a man-made canyon. It looks like they were doing some mining here or something at some point. And yeah, the sun is still here. It's still very bright. I imagine it'll get dark rather fast.
And you're getting pictures, right?
Yes, we have. We're shooting video. We're not just going across the country wasting a lot of time here. This is for the DVD of the Freedom Downtime project. We're going around shooting some video for that, and we'll be shooting video in California with Kevin as well as the infamous Day of Liberation approaches. And basically, we're just sharing a lot of interesting experiences with a lot of people. It's funny, every time we talk to somebody about this, their name happens to be Kevin, so of course we have to give them a free Kevin sticker, you know, because that's something everybody named Kevin likes to have. But we've met a lot of people who have heard of the case. We've met a lot of people who are learning about what happened and are just interested in things like the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, the ECSS case, the John Johansson case. They've heard about all of this. A lot of people have become educated over the years to the various issues facing the hacker community and the hacker community at large, just knowing what hackers are, what they stand for, what they do, what they don't do, how the media gets it wrong, and it's amazing to see how many people are enlightened as far as that goes. So that's pretty much where I am right now here in Bisbee. Not sure how long we'll be here, but be hitting some other places as well. Again, the email address if you'd like to meet up with us. And it's funny because we did the show last week from Atlanta. We were right in front of the CNN Center. We actually had a listener come and join us at the end of the show, which I thought was really cool. So there's people out there, no matter where you are, listening in some form or another. But if you want to email us and have us stop in your neighborhood or community along the way, the address is downtime, as freedom downtime without the freedom, downtime at 2600.com.
Sounds good.
Yes, and I can hear by that voice that Mike is here. Mike, you have some news as far as an important case today. And I think Bernie has also joined us, right?
Good evening, yes. Bernie S. in Philadelphia.
How you doing, Bernie?
Pretty good. It's freezing here.
It is freezing. It's very warm here where I am. That's the other thing. The temperature changes have been unbelievable. It was raining in Texas, chilly in Mexico, and it's very hot right here in Arizona.
Mexico or New Mexico?
Mexico and New Mexico. Both.
Okay.
I have an interesting story to tell about that, but let's get into the this interesting case that transpired today.
Well, sure. Well, last week we had some good news on the legal front, and of course we can't continue that for 2 weeks in a row. So we have Eldred versus Ashcroft, which is the case of Eric Eldred and friends who sued to overturn the Copyright Term Extension Act, the Sonny Bono Act, passed by Congress a few years ago. Under which, now in the United States, if you write a book or create a movie or anything, it will be copyrighted for your entire life, followed by 70 years. So that's quite a long time. If you're a corporation and you create a work, it's 95 years. So they sued to overturn that, represented by Larry Lessig. And today the Supreme Court ruled they lose, the act stays, Walt Disney wins.
So what does that actually mean for the average person?
Well, what it means is that if there's a book created or a movie, for example, Casablanca is the example they give in the AP article, and you would like to take that work and you know, create something based on it, for example, all of the Hollywood adaptations of Shakespeare, right, were done obviously without Shakespeare's permission or his agent's permission or any of that, because he died long enough ago that his work is in the public domain now. But basically what they're doing is work will never enter the public domain, it seems, because they keep extending it. Just when you think something's about to enter the public domain, they retroactively extend it for 20 more years in this case.
And hasn't this been extended by Congress several times now? What the Constitution said should just be a limited period of time?
Right. Someone called it perpetual copyright on the installment plan. So it's you know, it's illegal to create a perpetual copyright, but they can just apparently keep extending it as much as they want.
I've got a couple of good quotes. I've got a good quote from our friend Jack Valenti about the decision today. I don't know. Do you have that, Mike?
I don't have it.
Would the listeners be interested in hearing it? It's a short quote.
I'm interested in hearing it.
Well, okay. Jack Valenti said, "We're pleased that the court has reaffirmed the absolute authority of Congress to set copyright terms. We have always maintained that the law has long recognized that copyright, whose aim it is to provide incentive for the creation and preservation of creative works, is in the public interest. That is why this ruling is a victory not solely for the rights of holders, but also for consumers everywhere." Now, I've been trying to figure out the last part of that. How is this a victory for consumers?
I think Mr. Valenti went a little far there. It's already enough of a reach for him to be claiming that this in some way is something supporting artists or creativity. He got greedy. He went even further than that and said that, you know, all the consumers also benefit from this, when there's no possible way the consumers can benefit from this kind of a thing. This is purely for the industry. Make no mistakes about that. That's what they're interested in maintaining their grip on. It's all about maintaining control for forever, as long as they possibly can hold on to it.
The only way I could see consumers could have benefited, obviously consumers would have benefited had the decision gone the other way, and if old copyrighted works that had expired you know, maybe when the copyright holder had died, those works would have become public domain, and all kinds of interesting things could have been done with that copyright, that now copyright released work once it's in the public domain. But the public doesn't have access to things that would have been in the public domain by now because of this decision, and it's unfortunate.
I think 1920 is the cutoff date.
Something like that, yeah. So, for example, the earliest portrayals of Mickey Mouse, Wizard of Oz, if you sing Happy Birthday, that is not in the public domain, so don't do it in public.
I saw somebody do that in a restaurant back in New Mexico, like earlier. Oh, my God.
Well, you shouldn't say that on the radio.
What, oh, my God?
No. What?
Is that copyrighted now, too?
It could be. But, you know, the people could go to New Mexico and hunt down this restaurant if we're not careful.
Well, they don't have to. I'll turn them in. I mean, I want to be a good citizen here, but I just have to. Who do I tell? Who do I give the information to?
A lot of people had been planning on putting a lot of books that the copyright would have expired up on the Internet for fair use public access. And as a result, there's a lot of worthwhile books and works that can't be put up on the Internet because of this decision.
Is there any indication how this is going to be enforced internationally?
Well, this Copyright Term Extension Act, we're told, it's the same length as in the European Union. So basically there's kind of a quid pro quo, right, where if the U.S. has this 95-year term, then the EU also has it. In Canada, I understand, it's a shorter term, but I'm not sure of the details.
It's amazing how the EU has come to be, at just this time, and it's so agreeable to all these things the United States is suggesting to them.
So what's good for American corporations is good for the world.
Well, it's because American corporations are all over the world. In fact, I was just in Mexico, and it's amazing to see down there all these new plants that have popped up. You know, people, for the most part, are living in poverty, and it's really sad to see the structures that people call home. You know, cardboard boxes would be more secure in some areas, and then you have this nice new modern factory a few miles down the road where I guess all of them work for pennies a day. It's horrible to see how one-sided it is. The American corporations benefit by moving their workers down there, or moving their factories down there, and hiring workers at slave wages. But the people there don't benefit in that they don't get to live in a decent community as far as cleanliness, as far as sanitation, that kind of a thing. It's amazing, too, because people there are so nice. People there are very open to outsiders, very friendly, but I really feel they're being taken advantage of horribly.
Did you go and try and fill out a job application just to see what the wages were and benefits and things?
I'm not sure how exactly that would work. That would have been a good idea. You know, next time, Jeff, we got to bring you along on these things because you always get into trouble in ways that I could never think of getting into trouble.
Okay, we don't have to go there right now.
Oh, I mean, no, it's a good thing. Getting into trouble sometimes is necessary. But yeah, it was an eye opener just wandering around there. I went to a city for the first time called Monterey, which if you've ever driven in Monterey, boy, you've earned a medal. Let's just put it that way. It's craziness. They have these non-reflective stop signs. Get this, they have a stop sign at an intersection and a traffic light. Now, what would you do at a traffic light that has at an intersection that has a traffic light and a stop sign?
I'd stop if it were green.
See, you're not supposed to do that. And first, it's not a stop sign either. It's an alto sign, which is stop in Spanish. But it's non-reflective. You can't see it at night. I think it just left there from before they had traffic lights there. They just never took the sign up. Everybody seems to know how to get around, though, and eventually you sort of fall into the mood of driving. But it's mayhem. It's utter mayhem. And especially when you're just trying to navigate and figure things out. Now, the GPS system we have here, it's great. Certain cars come with this, and I think you can get it in consumer cars now. You have this speaking system. I'm going to demonstrate a little bit of it here, where you can actually plug in an address. I'm going to select something on the menu here. Let me know if you can hear this.
Address or intersection.
Did that come across okay?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, well, listen to the rest of it.
Street address.
I'm going to enter a street address. Let's try San Francisco.
Yes.
That yes was an answer to a question, do you know the city? I'm going to hit the enter button. And now it's asking me to spell the city. So what you're going to hear me doing now is moving the cursor around and spelling out the city.
M-L-S-N-K-C-A-N space M-S.
Okay, now I have four choices on the screen. I have San Felipe, Texas, San Fernando, California, San Francisco, California, in parentheses, San Francisco, and San Francisco, California, San Mateo, in parentheses. So I'm going to click down to San Francisco. Okay, and now it's asking me to spell the street name. I'm going to spell Market Street.
M-M-O-E-A-N-R.
N-K. Okay, now I have three choices, Mark Lane, Mark Twain Plaza, and Market Street. I'm going to click down to Market Street.
Should you be doing this while you're driving, Emmanuel?
I'm sorry?
Should you be doing this while you're driving now?
Well, you're not supposed to. In fact, you get a little warning saying, do not do this if you're driving. Hit enter if you're not driving. Well, you know, it's a method of security. It's not really that secure. Now I'm going to enter the number. The amazing thing about this system is it knows the numbering scheme. So if every number on a street begins with 1, the 1 will already be there for you, regardless of where the street is. So right now it's asking for numbers on Market Street, so I'm going to just enter random numbers. Okay, I'm just entering 5-5. 5-5.
9.
Okay, I have three choices now. Shortest time, most use of freeways, or least use of freeways. I'm going to select shortest time. And right now it's calculating the route. And that's the part that takes the longest, where you have a little progress bar. It has the address. It figures out all the roads between here. I'm in Arizona right now. It'll figure everything out until California, local roads, everything. I was on a dirt road earlier today going to the town of Tombstone, Arizona, which if you've never been there, that's a trip in itself. That's where the gunfight at the OK Corral took place, and they do a dramatic reenactment of it every half hour, and it's straight out of The Simpsons.
Did you try the pizza?
No, I did not, and I was thinking about that, decided not to pursue it. The route is practically done calculating. I have three more little dots to fill in.
I have a question.
Yeah.
It seems to us that we hear the system guessing the next letter as you spelled out the street. Is that correct?
That's very good, Jim. Yes, it's true. As you're spelling words out, some letters are there and some letters are not there. So if a certain city doesn't exist with a certain spelling, you won't be able to spell something that is not already there. And that goes for streets as well, and it goes all the way down to the numbering scheme. So this thing is very intelligent. It's on two CDs. We haven't yet figured out how to read the CDs outside of the system. We're experimenting with all kinds of things with this this system. In fact, the dividing line is Mississippi or the Mississippi River. When you cross over, the screen, literally the road ends. You see the little arrow. You're on a map the whole time. You see the arrow just continue into blackness.
Uh-oh.
And, hang on.
It's a highlighted route.
Okay, it just told me to proceed to the highlighted route. So it's given me directions all the way to Market Street now. It's 964 miles from here, and as soon as I start moving, it'll tell me exactly how long it'll take me to get there.
Is the basis estimate on your arrival time on your current speed or on speed limit or as fast as you really drive?
That's an interesting point, Bernie, because when I was driving into Bisbee, I was driving at a good clip above the speed limit, and everybody was. It wasn't just me, you know, causing problems here. It was basically everybody was driving at that speed. But the number on the screen was too high. It said it would take a half hour when we were about 3 miles away, and then all of a sudden it just kind of like erased that part of the screen and said, "You have arrived." And, you know, tried to back out of it without admitting it made a mistake. But we've confused it a few times. I think when we went into Mexico, it lost all of its self-confidence because that was just complete blackness. There were no roads at all. Mexico is not on the system. And after a while, you just get a message saying, you're too far from the road. I cannot pinpoint an accurate road from here. Please go back to a road. All the time, though, you can see the latitude and longitude. So that information is always being given to it. But once we got back into the States, it kept second-guessing itself. It kept saying, get back onto the highway when we were already on the highway. It took a little bit of reassurance for it to get back into its confident mode of telling us exactly what to do. When we went into Mississippi, though, when we crossed over, it has to switch to a second CD. So what happened was, after it went for a little while with no roads at all, it just kind of rebooted the system and rebooted onto the Western United States CD, and that's what we're on right now.
Does it hold both CDs at the same time, or do you have to physically put the other disc in?
No, you don't have to physically put it in. It's there to start with, but you can't have both CDs loaded at the same time. I can't, for instance, right now give directions to New York.
Are both discs, then, is it reading off the disc, or is it reading from memory, or how does that work?
Yes.
let me expand on that. It reads off the disc from what I understand, because there seems to be some accessing going on as it's figuring out the exact route to go, as it's giving you map information. So I imagine it's actually physically reading the disc as you're asking it questions.
So there's no hard drive in this thing, then? It's probably just a CD and memory, huh? No hard drive?
Yeah, I would imagine if there was a hard drive that it could load both parts of the country at the same time. I look forward to the day when you are able to have everything loaded. I look forward to the day when it has different countries loaded and you just simply go all over the place.
You could drive to France.
You could drive to France, literally. I think Canada is already in here.
Wow.
And you can pretty much drive along various streets up there as well. I've seen it make mistakes a few times, but I got to tell you, this thing is really good. You're driving along, it tells you when to make the left turn, tells you when to merge right. And when you arrive, we've gone to a few people's houses in the middle of suburbia, and we pull into their driveway, and the little voice says, "You have arrived." And it's so cool that it knows exactly where every house is. Of course, it's also very scary when you consider that all you have to do is load the white pages into this somehow, maybe load some unlisted phone numbers into this as well, and it's it's process server's dream. you can track down anybody really quickly and easily.
I might want to mention that I noticed that the Garmin Corporation, that makes a lot of GPS receivers, in about in a month or so, will be introducing a POM operating system based PDA, which has their auto route calculating GPS receiver built into it. So it's not only is it a POM pilot type of device, but it's also a GPS receiver. I don't know how much it'll cost, but you can stick this thing in your pocket and use it as your PDA and as your navigator.
It's really something how far technology has gone. I mean, the last time that I traveled cross country was 98 when we were filming Freedom Downtime, and it was cool. We had GPS then, but it was a handheld unit. Didn't talk to you, and music. Just playing music was something that we thought was cool. We could play CDs in a car. Now, and Bernie, you might want to go into detail on this a little bit. We have a really cool system set up involving an iPod and an FM transmitter, which permits us to listen to 20 gigs of music randomized that we downloaded from various computers. Actually, these are all CDs that I own that I put onto my iMac, my Macintosh iMac, and then from there I took about 20 gigs of selected music, stuck that onto the iPod. For those who don't know, an iPod is basically a handheld hard drive that has music on it and can play albums or randomize or whatnot. The only problem is, with this car, we had a CD player. We didn't have a cassette player, so we weren't able to do that thing where you put the cassette in and have a converter and simply play it that way. We had no way to actually make the iPod speak to the car radio system. So, Bernie, maybe you could give us some details as to what we did then.
Well, after a while, you made your way to Philadelphia on the way to I guess it was Baltimore you were heading down. So I happen to have this little FM radio transmitter with me. So I found you, and we hooked it up to the iPod. It's a device about the same size as the iPod, which is about the size of a pack of cigarettes. It's made by a company called C Crane, which you can find at ccrane.com. And what this thing does is it has a little LCD display on it and an on-off button, and you can digitally select the frequency that it's going to transmit the external audio input to. For instance, you plug it into the iPod headphone jack, and you can tune to a a radio frequency that's not in use by a local radio station. And I imagine you have to change this as you're driving around, don't you, Emmanuel, as you find...
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting because we select a frequency that's completely blank, and during the first part of the trip, it would last about maybe 20 minutes and something would start to interfere. And I got to tell you, when I get back, I'm going to play some of the stuff that we recorded on the radio. One time we heard interference, and we decided to check out to see what it was. And on the next frequency over, I heard a religious radio station like I've never heard before. There were these people, they must have been sitting around in a circle, just chanting Hail Marys for a half hour. It sounded so demonic and scary. We immediately called all our friends with cell phones and voicemail systems so we could record this thing and capture it.
Where was it?
This was, where was this? It had to have been in Mississippi or might have been Texas. No, it was crossing over into Texas is what it was.
Was Trent Lott anywhere near there?
I'm not sure. It was actually Louisiana-Texas border, so I'm not sure where the station was coming from. But I got to tell you, I've heard some things. It's very annoying to me when I hear religious stations below 92 on the dial because they're taking up a non-commercial spot, and that means a community station doesn't get it, a college station doesn't get it. And, you know, it's something that I think belongs in the commercial dial, not below 92, which is only non-commercial radio, and there's such limited spectrum out there. There is so much religion that you would not believe in. Most of the stations that I heard below 92 are religious stations, an occasional NPR station. And, you know, I have strong feelings about NPR, how they've taken over lots of frequencies in the New York area. But down in the South and in most parts of the country, they really are, you know, a bastion of just alternative thought, which tells you something about the other thoughts that are being expressed on the radio.
So this, I would imagine, as you're driving alongside other vehicles, Emmanuel, that if they happen to be tuned to the same frequency that this little FM transmitter was broadcasting on, and being picked up by your car radio, that the cars near you could also pick up this same audio, couldn't they?
Yeah. Well, we tested it, and it goes for maybe a quarter of a block. You can pick up a signal. So yeah, if you're passing by somebody, it just happens to be. But you see, they wouldn't really be listening to a station. Unless there was a frequency there. And this
couldn't you hold a sign up in your window saying, hey, tune to this radio frequency?
Well, yeah, usually people are pointing at us as we pass by anyway, so it might be a good idea just to hold the sign up, and then they can tune to that frequency, and we can even speak to them if we get a microphone.
There you go.
But we'll try that. That's a good idea. When we were in Mexico, though, we were able to keep the same signal for a long time because there are a lot of gaps on the FM dial. And we were able to listen to music for a good long time.
Hmm. Wow, that's pretty interesting.
The system, I got to tell you, Bernie, this system really does work. It's really cool.
There's a little hack I discovered today that you can increase the power output of this thing. It's not it's no longer going to be FCC type accepted. I promised the person I wouldn't mention this on the air, but if anyone wants to email me privately at BernieS@2600, if they want to modify this little transmitter, I can tell them how to do it in about 10 seconds. So that it would be have a little more range than it's supposed to.
How much of a little more range, Bernie?
Probably about double or triple the range.
Okay. Well, I mean, should I be concerned at all this RF output being aimed at my head?
Well, your cell phone is a lot more. It emits a lot more energy. Probably a few hundred milliwatts. Your cell phone puts out, and this thing puts out more like 10-20 milliwatts. You could probably adjust it, if they want to contact me directly, to closer to 100 milliwatts.
Interesting.
Emmanuel.
Yes?
Would you mind terribly if I mentioned that we're listening right now to WBAI FM in New York?
No, I wouldn't mind. Go right ahead and mention it.
Oh, thank you. We're in stereo.
Okay.
I just want to get that out of the way. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, again, we're playing with technology in all different ways. In Mexico, I was very surprised to see that there was GSM coverage. Maybe in Tijuana and Baja, where I was before, there is no GSM. I'm not sure about that. I'll try to find out that later in this voyage. But I was able to pick up a company. I think my phone identified it as 33402, which would indicate there's always somebody. There's always somebody that forgets to turn their phone off in that studio.
This is the studio phone. It's I don't know what it is.
Oh, they got a new ringer, right? There does seem to be a at least one GSM phone carrier in Mexico now. I guess two, since I saw 33402, that would indicate that there's a 01. So I was able to actually make some phone calls and receive phone calls. God knows how much it's going to cost. But that's part of the whole experimental thing. Now, Sprint is interesting because when I was in Monterey, and maybe, Bernie, you can help me figure this out, Sprint, I believe, receives its time from the transmitter. It does not receive the time from the phone, correct?
That's right. None of the, I've had three different Sprint PCS handsets over the past 5 or 6 years since I've been a Sprint subscriber, and none of the handsets had a real-time clock built in. The clock display was synchronized with the network clock, so that's kind of interesting. I don't like that, actually. I like when I go out of range to be able to know what time it is with my phone, but I can't do that with Sprint PCS phones.
Well, the interesting thing is, when I was in Monterey, my Sprint phone received absolutely no coverage, but it was telling me what time and date it was.
It's really contingent upon the model of the phone, but all the models I've had have relied on the network to tell you what time it is. But I'm glad yours doesn't.
Well, let me just also add to that when I was in New Mexico, I also was receiving no signal at all, and my phone was not telling me what time and date it was. So I think... And the person I was with was getting analog roaming with their Sprint PCS phone. I don't have an analog digital phone. I only have a digital phone. So I suspect something is going on down there where the time signal is being transmitted anyway, even though you're not getting a phone signal.
Well, you're getting, you said your phone said no signal, but it still said an accurate time?
It said a completely accurate time, an accurate date, and it was consistent over there. I received no service, so I was not able to make a phone call. There were no bars on the little transmitter string.
Well, that's interesting. That's very puzzling, but I'll look into that.
Yeah, and if anybody out there might know more about that, by all means, let us know.
Are you going to be near Los Angeles during your Kevin Mitnick liberation tour?
Well, that is the plan. Basically, Kevin's going to be in the Bay Area on Liberation Day, and I'm hoping to make it down to that area as well after that. The plan originally was to go there beforehand, but since he's going to be in the Bay Area on the 20th, that's obviously where we want to be as well.
If you're in L.A., you might want to check out this new intelligent billboard that I've heard about, that other people, listeners, have probably heard about by now. It's been in the news the past few weeks. You've probably heard about it too, Emmanuel. It's an intelligent billboard. It's like a big video billboard by some highway in L.A. made by a company called Alaris Media. And what it does is it intercepts the local oscillator frequency of your FM car radio, assuming you have it on, and determines from that local oscillator frequency in your radio, which is really emitting a weak transmission itself, what station you're tuned to. It does a quick demographic analysis of the driver of the car and then displays a message on the billboard appropriate to your demographics.
That's freaky.
Yes.
But here's my question. Can it possibly do that for every car that passes by?
Well, no, it probably does some sort of averaging based on, because, you're probably going to get 10 cars in 10 cars every 30 seconds that are tuned to the same station. It probably does a moving average of the most frequently tuned station that's going by for that 10-second block of time or however often the commercial message changes on the billboard. But I thought you could, if some enterprising person could build a little radio transmitter about the size of a pack of cigarettes with a solar cell powering it, and just sort of toss it out the window near this thing and have, basically jam this billboard on one particular message and see if that works.
Well, that's dangerous thinking, Bernie, and that's exactly the kind of thinking we like to promote here at Off the Hook.
I've got something on these lines from a strange source. About 8 years ago, I was listening to the Howard Stern show, and he had a company working for him in Canada that essentially picked up the oscillations from the cars going by to determine how many of them were listening to the Howard Stern show. But the Canadian government shut this company down because it was an invasion of Canadians' privacy.
Wow.
Well, here in the States, we have no privacy, so that's
pretty
just
true.
Okay.
No,
that's the same technique. That's the same technique that the British have used for decades to enforce their radio licensing.
Yeah. Illegal watching of TV and listening of radio.
Mm-hmm.
And they send those radio trucks that you see in the old war movies.
Nicholas Hertz never lost auto navigatie system.
I'm sorry.
What was that?
It's not speaking Dutch now. I hit the
cancel.
Okay, I'm trying to cancel it. Okay, I did. I'm sorry. I forgot to mention that this thing speaks multiple languages, and just hitting the wrong button, it can lapse into demo mode and talk for a long time. Sorry about that.
So you can be a foreigner coming to this country and actually get around the country using one of these little units.
You can be a foreigner. In fact, two of the first people that I know who used this system did come from Holland, in fact. Rob and Barry were here during H2K2, and they were using this system and driving all around New York and figuring out ways to confuse it. And
Emmanuel?
Anyway, yes.
What languages does it offer?
Let's see. I'll go to the options menu and tell you that. English, Dutch, French, German, Japanese, Italian, and Spanish right now.
Wow.
And you can also select your destinations to be in miles or kilometers, which I think is pretty cool.
I can't wait for the Arabic version.
And, you know, that brings me to mind of something else, which maybe a listener out there can help me with. But we're going to be journeying into Mexico again in a different part and then heading back up. And there is an interstate in Arizona. I'm looking up the map right now. It's called I-19. And on the map it says I-19 uses metric mileposts. Exit numbers are in kilometers, and on the map they show everything in miles like they do everywhere else. But I'm just wondering, this goes from Nogales to Tucson. It's not a very long stretch, but for some reason that seems to be the only interstate stretch in the United States that's in the metric system, and I'm just wondering why that is.
Is there a gas station there that serves gas in liters?
Well, I'll have to check. I'll probably be checking that out sometime tomorrow. But, you know, I also wonder, when I'm traveling in other countries, every country in the world uses a 24-hour clock. Every country in the world uses the metric system. You know, I'm not saying our system is terrible. I'm not saying it's a bad idea. I'm not saying that we're stuck in the past and we don't have the motivational will to move forward. I just want to know why. Why are we using this system instead? If someone can explain to me what's better about Fahrenheit, what's better about, you know, feet versus meters, I just want to know the reason. When I was a kid, I remember there was a big deal about converting to the metric system.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, it just seems to have been forgotten. And it's like the rest of the world is doing one thing and we're doing another. And I'm just wondering, is that the idea? Is that the plan for us just to be isolated from everybody else? Because if that's the plan, at least, you know, I'd like to know it. If it's not the plan, maybe it's a good idea to get with what the rest of the world is doing, because the metric system really does make a lot of sense.
The latest I heard, Emmanuel, is the U.S. government was trying to impose and enforce the English measurement system we're using on other countries now, especially in Afghanistan.
Yeah, how in the world? I don't want to know what these people are smoking. How in the world do we expect people to use an old system that has already been used and put aside?
Well, that was a joke, but I just thought...
Oh, it was a joke. Okay, I'm sorry.
It's hard to tell these days.
When you travel this much, you kind of get a little jaded, you know, and lose your sense of humor. But thanks. Thanks for the humor. That was appreciated. Again, I'm in Bisbee, Arizona at a rest stop. Not really a rest stop, but a scenic overlook by a place called Bisbee Blue. And I'll be traveling into town later after this show, going to like a big coffee house at the bottom of the hill. I'm going to hang out there for a little while.
While you're in the coffee house, you might want to bring your iPod and your little portable transmitter with you into the coffee house, and ask them to tune their stereo to your frequency.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay, I thought you thought maybe somebody would steal it while it was in the car. But yeah, that's a good idea. I will try to do it. The only reason I'm mentioning this, I don't expect mass throngs of people to surround us or anything like that. But because we did have people show up last week in Atlanta, and I do know people. Throughout the world, listen to the radio show as well. So it's fun to kind of connect with people along the way. Speaking of which, do we have any more information we want to give to people? Or do you want to take some phone calls?
Well, we can take some phone calls.
Okay, then let's take some phone calls.
Here we go.
The number here, of course, is 212-209-2900.
Hello, you're on the air.
That's a dial tone.
Could have been worse. Yes, what I meant. Hello, you're on the air.
Okay, I'm on the air. I've given some thought to this, about the Fahrenheit Celsius stuff. seems
it
to
sounds
me,
like Claude.
Yeah, Claude, that's who I am, man.
Wow.
I can barely hear you, but it doesn't matter. I can hear you a little.
You don't need to hear me. Go right ahead.
That, like, in the Celsius system, 0 to 100 is freezing to boiling. And the Fahrenheit system, I don't know if it was planned this way, but 0 to 100 is just about the range of temperatures in the temperate zone. It rarely gets below zero. It rarely goes above 100. You know, in the Fahrenheit, I mean the Celsius system, the numbers are, by our standards, arbitrary. You know, unless you're doing stuff with beakers and titrates and whatever, it doesn't matter what, unless you're boiling up your food, it's not useful for weather. And that, to me, is what, you know, temperature system is most useful for.
There's one thing I like about the system we use is it's more accurate as far as increments go. There are more increments between, between the temperature of water freezing or boiling. There's 100 different divisions with centigrade, and with
212 with us. Sure.
Well, 212 minus 32, so it's like 100, and it's almost twice as accurate as far as its increments go. But, you know, so what?
But on that same token, Bernie, you can tell the difference between 13 degrees Celsius and 14 degrees Celsius, and I don't think you can tell the difference between 1 degree and Fahrenheit. So I think it's a bit more accurate as far as knowing what temperature is likely to be today.
Now, listen, I can barely hear you. I'm going to sign off and listen.
All right, thanks for calling.
Okay. The other thing I like about it is the fact that water boils at 212 degrees in Fahrenheit, and that's our area code, 250. I don't know if that was planned either.
What temperature? The Fahrenheit?
Fahrenheit 451 is the temperature that books burn in. What's the centigrade temperature at which books burn?
That's something I'd have to look up.
Or convert.
I'm not sure. Is that the same temperature magazines burn at, or just books?
It's book paper, so some magazines would burn at that temperature. Most
it depends on the magazine.
Yeah, most magazine paper is treated with kaolin, the clay.
What temperature does 2600 magazine burn at?
Well, that's something I'd like to find out. I'd like to also know at what temperature does the internet burn.
Well, when it's closed for cleaning next April 1st, maybe we'll burn a small part.
Next call.
All right. The one thing I have to say, though, is I don't know if I could ever get used to saying it's 13 o'clock.
That would you know, it's funny because people don't say that. They say 1 or 2 o'clock, and they know what it means.
I heard, while we were in Berlin, someone say, oh, it's 13 o'clock.
Really?
Yes.
They say 1,300 hours sometimes. I never heard 13 o'clock.
Nah, that's I heard it, I promise.
But did they say it in English? Or
yes. Yeah, it was in English.
Oh, so it was probably tourists.
Yeah, it's probably tourists trying to be cool. You know, at the beginning of 1984, the clocks were striking 13. They don't do that either.
True.
All right.
Here we go. One more. Hello, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Regarding metrics and U.S. government, the Department of Transportation and perhaps other agencies is requiring all contracts be let in metric units. So that could be why that highway was marked in kilometers, or, you know, that's kind of the movement that's happening now in the federal government, at least.
So you think
this is fairly recent change.
Huh? It's starting with I-19, and maybe it'll move to the entire interstate system.
We'll see. Or at least, you know, it's. I guess there's a difference necessarily between the contracting and the building and actually where they mark the mile markers. You know, there you could still have the contract be all in centimeters and stuff, and still put down mile markers, but, you know, I don't know.
You know what? I intend, when I go out journeying in the next couple of days, what I'll do is I'll find somebody on that interstate that knows the answer, and I'm going to report back next week with the facts.
You go, Emmanuel.
All
right. How about all these new exit numbers? They're changing all around the country. You know, it used to be just arbitrary exit numbers. Now the exit numbers are by a certain mile marker. If they were to change the metric system, they'd have to change all the exit signs across the country.
Yeah, that's going to be a hassle if they ever do that. But no one told them to go to Miles anyway in the first place. We were happy.
It would have been a perfect if they're going to change them. It would have been a perfect opportunity to do them in metric right when they're right when they started this just last year or whatever.
Yeah, they wouldn't even have to tell us it was metric. They could have just changed it to another arbitrary system, and then one day they would say in the morning news, "Oh, by the way, it's all metric system, and those are kilometers." And then we'd say, "Oh, okay, so this is how many kilometers it is from one exit to another," and we'd learn without knowing it.
What a lost opportunity,
Emmanuel. That is actually a brilliant idea.
Yeah. Well, it was an opportunity lost, is what it was.
Oh well. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Could you repeat the name of that FM transmitter and the email to email you about tweaking it?
Pcrane.com. That's as in Charlie, Romeo, Alpha, November, Echo. Pcrane.com. And you can email me directly, BernieS@2600.com, and I'll tell you how to boost his power output.
BernieS@2600.com?
That's right.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Glad to be of help. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi. I think one of the reasons the metric system failed to take hold is because when they did that campaign to try to get people to switch, they foolishly focused on trying to alert people to the correspondence between metric and the traditional way. So, a liter is this much, compares this way to a quart. As people who are buying sodas have found out, you don't really need to know how much of a quart a liter is. Everybody knows what a 1 liter soda is, and everybody knows what a 2 liter soda is. So if instead of just trying to tell people the correspondence to the old system, they would have said, here's a liter, and they show a liter bottle. Here's a meter, and they show something that's a meter long. I think people would have adopted the system more readily.
Yeah, but if you're building a house, you're definitely going to need to know the corresponding measurement changes and things when you're buying your lumber.
Why is that?
Well, if they're selling it to you in meters and you don't know your feet, or you know your feet, you're gonna lose. You're gonna wind up short.
But instead of telling you it's this much of a foot, why don't they just show you a stick that's a meter long? Say, do you want two of these? You want three of these long? You want four of these long? You want five of these long?
Well, yeah, but I don't go to the lumberyard now with a stick that happens to be the same size as the plank that I want. I actually get a tape measure and measure it. Now, what you would propose and would be a good idea is that we get tape measures marked off in meters and centimeters and measure that. That makes sense, but you're misstating the idea of what could be done or should be done.
No, we're going to do this. You got to do this cold turkey, or the pain is just too long. You got to do it quickly, and then and by the end of the year, people will be all over it. I remember when we were starting to switch over the metric system. I think it was the early 70s, maybe, Emmanuel. There was a lot of paranoia because gas prices were going up. I think it was around the time of the first Arab oil embargo,
right,
kind of thing. That's before the one that's coming up soon. And there was a lot of paranoia that people were getting overcharged for gasoline because they didn't know exactly how many dollars per gallon they were really getting, or gallons per dollar they're actually getting, because they didn't know the conversion off the top of their head. And I think that was one of the resistances, reasons people resisted is they weren't really sure if they're getting their money's worth.
Right, but yeah, I'm saying that when they go cold turkey, instead of trying to teach you an equivalence, they just teach you what a liter is, what a meter is.
Yeah, I think a good project for listeners for maybe the next week is just try to do everything metrically, speak metrically, think metrically, and see how easy it is for you to work it out and how much resistance you get from the people around you to express yourself in a different way. I don't know, maybe when we start, being a little more aggressive about using this system, it might start to catch on. I think, myself included, I've just been accepting the fact that the metric system in this country is dead. And it really shouldn't be that way. I guess we lost that caller.
Yeah, he's gone.
Oh, I still think it's a good idea.
Yeah, but just imagine if we start talking to one another and we start talking about kilos, it could take an ugly
turn. I think we're talking about drugs.
See?
Right.
Oh, yeah. Once one tells me how many kilos they weigh, I have to admit I don't know what they're talking about. And in England, they use stone. They
That's
say
right.
I weigh... I don't know what kind of system that is.
I've lost 4 stones.
And it was very painful, wasn't it?
All right, here we go. You're on the air.
Yeah. Good evening, guys.
How you doing?
I'm all right. Interesting alternative radio when I tune in, that's what I heard.
You might be holding something too close to something.
But my question to you guys, I want to know, in terms of the metric system, about the human body temperature, I was asked about what is the normal body temperature. Nobody could have said in school, and it was a problem. I knew it, but I was afraid to say it because everybody is a different metric, because I'm from a different, you know, background. One student actually said in Fahrenheit, the teacher didn't accept it. And when I said it in centigrade, he said, well, yeah, that's the right one. What do you think about that?
Well, tell us what it is.
No, I know it's 37 centigrade, but in, the other student was saying it in Fahrenheit. But the teacher didn't approve of it. He said
all right. Listen, turn off your radio, please.
Yes, my radio is off.
Well, we don't know.
Something's making a horrible screech.
Your voice is resonating with the phone, man.
Oh, how about now?
That's now? Much better.
Okay. So, why they would accept the centigrade here in school and they wouldn't approve of the Fahrenheit when it's the one that's legal?
I have no idea what the question is, let alone the answer. Normal human temperature in Fahrenheit is 98.6 degrees.
Yes,
centigrade, it's roughly 37 degrees.
37, yeah, and that's what I said. And this is just the one he said I was right. He had approved the other one. So, like, you're right. So
maybe they simply didn't know. Maybe your teacher learned metric and didn't learn Fahrenheit.
Probably. All right, guys. Good. Is this program on every week or every day?
Every week.
Every week?
Unless we're preempted for fundraising or heaven knows what else.
What is the time for it?
1 hour, starting at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard or Daylight Time, depending on whether it's Standard or Daylight Time, Wednesdays. Yeah. WBAI-FM 99.5.
Great. Thank you, guys.
You're welcome.
It's a few minutes to 6 where I am, so that gives you an idea how far off the mark I am. But the show is on from 7 to 8 in New York, and people listen to it all around the world. And we welcome people writing to us as well online, oth@20600.com.
They can send it. They can send us mail also.
At 120 yes. Wall Street here in New York, and I don't know the zip code. 10005?
Yes, but please make sure that the mail you send us meets postal regulations. Those are those little notices on every mailbox in the world, or in the United States. It tells you how big something has to be to send it to the mailbox.
Okay, here's another one. Hello, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Too bad. You are correct. I was about to say about 98.6 and 37, but you know it can be anywhere from at least Fahrenheit from as low as 97 to 100.5 and still be considered normal. So I'm not sure if that is Celsius wise, but in any case,
105 is a bad fever though.
100.5.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah, that's still considered okay, although it probably won't feel so great. In any case, the second reason I think people will not let go of the old English system, except ironically the English, is because I think intuitively it's correct. The other gentleman made the point that, and he wasn't sure, but I think I'm pretty sure that the reason why the Fahrenheit system got into use was 100 was considered a very hot day in England and 0 was considered a very cold day in England.
Well, actually, Fahrenheit started the system. I'm not sure how he got the 100, but he got 0 because it was the coldest temperature he could replicate. I can't remember exactly how he did it, but it was the coldest.
Salt water, I think it was.
Yeah, I think you are right.
Mm-hmm. That was the lowest he could go with water that was mixed with salt. So that's number one. So he considered that kind of absolute zero for...
Well, not absolute zero, but it was the lowest
human purpose.
Consistent number he could replicate on the low end.
Right, and then 100, I kind of think, I could be wrong, that he felt that was a very hot day in England. So in any case, for purposes of weather, it's a good system. It's from 0 to 100, and I think even though it does make sense to do everything in hundreds like the metric system does, I think you can extend that to measurements in any other way. A gallon is good, use of a particular amount of liquid, and the foot is a good distance for, you know, a person, or, you know, things that you normally measure in day to day. Now, I'm not saying that this doesn't mean that we shouldn't change to a more, you know, I guess the word is a more scientific system, because we should be past points of convenience. But, you know, people want to die with what they're used to.
No, I'm not so sure about that. I think the advantages of an anthropomorphic-friendly system are obvious once you start analyzing it. I mean, yeah, if you're measuring parsecs and light years, the metric system is fine. But if you want something on a human scale, something actually based on a human scale has its usefulness. You can make seat-of-the-pants calculations immediately.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're all,
I agree.
Homo sapiens just coincidentally have 10 fingers and 10 toes, which is why we have a base 10 system based on metric, that sort of thing. Just think, if Homo sapiens evolved with 12 fingers instead of 10 fingers, we'd have like a base 12 mathematics system.
But we'd be comfortable with it.
Exactly. That's right. Interesting.
And a lot of people actually say it's the best system because you could divide
now,
it into a lot
we
of
all born with a, if we were born with 16 fingers, we could all be really good programmers because we'd already be thinking in hexadecimal.
This is true, although that would be probably very hard to live. But in any case, thanks a lot, guys.
You're welcome.
I got to say, you know, I went into this program with a lot of things to talk about, and the metric thing was just something that I just mentioned off the top of my head. Just went into a little rant about that, and that turns out to be the thing that everybody is interested in.
See what you started?
I guess it is a very fascinating type of a thing because it affects everybody, and there are some interesting questions as to why we do certain things a certain way, and does that relate to us as a culture? And I guess, you know, in a way we can learn from that, and technologically certainly there are all kinds of implications. So I don't know. We'll continue with this subject.
All right. Emmanuel, we've got to wrap it up a little bit here. I didn't get a chance to talk about the article on the EFF. Unintended consequences, 4 years under the DMCA. So I'd recommend that everyone go to their webpage and read the article. It's quite interesting. And while you're there, maybe join and become a part of that.
And next week at this time, Kevin Mitnick will be free, finally, of his supervised release. There'll be no more restrictions on him. We'll be passing through the states of Arizona, Nevada, and going into the Bay Area. So if you're somewhere along that stretch, feel free to send us mail. Downtime@2600.com, and we'll try to hook up.
Jeff, mention the EFF's website. What is it?
It's EFF.org. Okay, thanks, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Take care.
I was young, I fought for freedom. When I was young, I fought the Klan. Who would have thought I'd still be fighting? 30 or 40 years down the line.
Yes, this is Matt Jones. I've been fighting 30 or 40 years down the line. And every year on Martin Luther King's birthday, this year will be January 20th, we have a program. This year we'll have Bob Zellner, recruited in the civil rights movement by Dr. Martin Luther King. He was the first white field secretary of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, was arrested some 29 times, and was an unsung hero of the civil rights movement. And he will talk to us about his experiences. That's at the Advent Lutheran Church, Monday, January 20th at 7 p.m. at West 93rd Street and Broadway. See you there. I fought for freedom when I was young. I fought the Klan. Who would have thought?